Well, greetings everyone and welcome to the Law Hour and Editorial Review. The Law Hour is sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. Now, the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. I'm your narrator, George Gordon. The Law Hour and Editorial Review is heard nationally and internationally 7 days a week here in the United States and in more than 120 countries worldwide over the Internet. For more information about the Law Hour and Editorial Review, please visit our webpage at georgegordon.org. Again, that's georgegordon.org. Now, the Law Hour and Editorial Review brings you important information about law, science, education, politics, religion, health, history, economics, news, and current events. So stay tuned for tonight's special report on scientific frauds when we come back. You know, the income tax and Social Security programs are not compatible with our traditional American values. These two programs are the second and the eighth planks of the Communist Manifesto. These programs call for a heavy progressive income tax in place of tithing. Social Security is a social welfare scheme that takes the place of strict liability and individual responsibility. The income tax requires of us that we serve two masters in violation of Matthew 6, verse 24. The income tax requires of us that we rob God in violation of Malachi 3, verse 8. The income tax requires of us that we commit idolatry in violation of Exodus 20, verse 3. The income tax requires of us that we use unjust weights and balances in violation of Leviticus 19, verses 35 and 36. And the income tax requires of us that we sign contracts with foreign and alien gods in violation of Exodus 23, verses 32 and 33. And Social Security violates the strict liability statute in Exodus 21, verses 28 through 36. Social Security violates the 10th commandment by appealing to our lust and greed, and then we're taught to call that income redistribution. The scripture calls it covetousness in violation of Exodus 20, verse 17. Now, you know, the God of Israel gave us a better way of life than that, and our founding fathers followed that better way. And that's why I contend that you and I ought to learn of and practice that better way of life. Now, if you'd like more information about tax and status, why don't you call us here at the law school? The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, be sure to ask for our free general law CD package while you're at it. That's a four-hour commentary on the law school. It's entertaining, it's educational, it's informative, and best of all, it's free. If you're online, go to our website, georgegordon.org, and go to our archives page and download it right there. That's georgegordon.org, and then go to the archives. All right, we're talking about scientific frauds. Last time we introduced you to three scientific frauds, Life from Outer Space, Archaeopteryx, and Java Man. That's three of the top eight. Let's take a look at Neanderthal. You know, I just saw a Neanderthal picture. It was on Nova, you know, on a 60-minute show on Neanderthal just this year on Nova. Neanderthal was discovered back in 1856, I believe it was, over in Germany. He, at the time, was not looked at as being some half-man, half-ape, because that was 3 years before Charles Darwin wrote his book on Origin of Species. But during the 1870s, some French guy over there said, hey, we got a skeleton over here. Let's take a look at this and see if we can't fit this in to Darwin's Origin of the Species. And sure enough, they did. And so, as time went on, you know, there was some controversy about Neanderthal. Now, I can remember Neanderthal when I was in high school. Archaeopteryx and Neanderthal were kissing cousins, and they were part and parcel. I didn't know that Neanderthal was a fraud, though. Now, Neanderthal wasn't a fraud like Java Man. They actually have more than one skeleton of Neanderthal. There's a bunch of them. And they came to find out that this Neanderthal skeleton over here, he's not some kind of a brute. He's a guy that had arthritis. Yeah, he was debilitated. He was handicapped. And probably needed a wheelchair. I don't know whether he had one or not, but he probably needed one. And they took that and they made an artist's conception of what he looked like. Now, an artist can make these bones look like a brute or like a college professor. You know, whatever they want to do, they can just draw it up over the bones. I mean, after all, if you can put hair color and texture and the waves or the straights, you know, into a hair on a Java Man, why can't you make Neanderthal look any way you want it? And that's what they do. They have these artist's conceptions. And people believe it. They look at, I believed it. Hell, when I saw this Neanderthal, I said, no, that ain't a half ape, half man. I don't know what is. That's what they needed to depict, and that's what they drew up, and that's what I saw, and that's what I believed when I was in the 10th grade. I bought the whole story hook, line, and sinker. I didn't have any reason not to. After all, my mommy and daddy sent me to public school, and the public school teacher showed me the pictures. Now, why would I doubt mommy and daddy and my teachers, huh? Now, as it turns out, I was lied to, and Nova is still perpetrating that lie today, as I speak. But fortunately, the guy that wrote the book here that we're reviewing here, Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Boyes, he went into some other books and other sources and said, hey, let me reveal this to you. You didn't know this, but this Neanderthal, and when I was in school, they called him Neanderthal, you know, like fag, thal. On Nova, they don't call him Neanderthal, they call him Neanderthal. T-A-L-L, not T-H-A-L. Now, I don't know why they've changed the name or the spelling. Maybe they changed the name, but I see the spelling here in this book, T-H-A-L. It's N-E-A-N-D-E-R-T-H-A-L. Now, that sounds like Neanderthal to me. But the Nova people in the program I just saw recently called him Neanderthal. Well, Neanderthal has become a well-used word in the English language. It's often used to denigrate Christians or conservatives because of our antiquated views. The word carries with it the idea of crudeness, ignorance, and lack of sophistication. Why you, Neanderthal? You ever heard that used? In other words, a Neanderthal was not much of a man, maybe just half a man. And most people make a big deal about Neanderthal man, who was first found in Germany in 1856 with a brain capacity larger than modern man. You believe that? Larger. So we've been degenerating. Yet he was depicted as a barrel-chested, hairy, brutish, stooped person, intermediate between ape and man, maybe the original big city mugger. Now, we know otherwise. He was not ape man, but he was a man, with arthritis and rickets, who buried his dead with ceremony, indicating some kind of religious belief, and he was a skilled craftsman. He made tools. Anthropologist A. Montague of Princeton University agreed. He said, quote, "Owing to want of a little knowledge of elementary anatomy, some of these authorities who have engaged in reconstruction of Neanderthal man have represented him with a bull neck, grotesque features, and walking with a stoop. Now, it has also often been asserted that Neanderthal man must have been of low intelligence because he had a low forehead. All these slanders are indefensible." Unquote. As early as 1864, the German anatomist Meyer called attention to Neanderthal's physical problems in addition to being dead. And in 1872, Rudolf Virchow, father of modern pathology, boldly said that Neanderthal was not ancient, but a human who suffered from rickets. That was in the late 1800s. But the evolutionists didn't want to give up Neanderthal. So respected scientist Marcelin Boule, B-O-U-L-E, from the National Museum of Natural History in Paris, tried to reconcile the large brain capacity, indicating advanced intelligence, with him being a brutish man. Boule decided to use the pseudoscience of phrenology, using the bumps on the surface of the skull to judge intelligence, and argued that, yes, Neanderthal had a large brain, but it was inferior, according to phrenology. If bumps on the skull indicate intelligence, then most evolutionists are old smoothies. So where did the statues and pictures showing a stumbling brute come from if Neanderthal was a full man who would not be looked at twice on the street tomorrow morning? All recent pictures depict him as a modern man, although stooped from arthritis and rickets. They were pulled from the minds of artists, after all. An artist can make Neanderthal look like a savage or a scholar, depending upon his bias. E.A. Hooton said that the alleged restorations of ancient types of men have very little, if any, scientific value, and that they are likely only to mislead the public. No doubt about that. By 1975, Neanderthal was recognized as fully human, so Neanderthal was not half man, half ape, or half connecting link, but he was a full man with a debilitating disease. So down goes another missing link. Now, in the Nova presentation, they did not mention a word about Neanderthal having rickets or arthritis. Not a word. Now, I don't write this kind of stuff. Boys and girls, I'm not smart enough to do that. And when I saw this book, Chapter 18, Eight Scientific Frauds, I said, well, let me read about these frauds. That sounds like a scoop. That sounds like a story to me. This is called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, written by Don Boyes, Ph.D., and you can get it from Freedom Publications, P.O. Box 981, Largo, Florida, 34649. So if you didn't catch up with all of that, try it again. It's called Freedom Publications, Post Office Box 981, in Largo, Florida, 34649. Now, oftentimes when you get a book like this, this one's old. It's 16 years old. And this guy's got good credentials. He's written a number of books, first edition published in 1994. This is evidently a first edition publication because it doesn't have any succeeding editions. It's got a Library of Congress catalog number, an ISBN number, and tells us a little bit about the author and so on. But if you're having a problem finding a book like this, the first place to go is bravenewbookstore.com. They're in Austin, Texas, and they handle this kind of stuff. Now, you might find this in a Bible bookstore, a good possibility of it. You might find this in a used bookstore in the science racks. And instead of looking up and down, you know, looking for this title, because there'll be a lot of books in there on evolution, what you do is you take the title of the book and the author, and you have the owner of the used bookstore plug it into his computer, because most used bookstores are plugged into a computer database that is now worldwide. I have found rare books as far away as Long Beach, California, and Cape Town, South Africa. Very simple. All you do is plug in the title of the book and the author. And if that book shows up anywhere in the world, in 450,000 bookstores, anywhere in the world, in 450,000 bookstores, it'll come back and say, yeah, there's a copy in Sudbury, England, or there's a copy in Toronto, Canada, or yeah, there's one down in Mexico City, Mexico, or whatever, around the world. And that's just one of the neat ways for you to find some of these off-the-wall, hard-to-find books. Now, I'm going to give you a report on it, and I'm going to tell you what we found out, but oftentimes, people want to know, well, where did you get that? I heard you say that, but where did you get that? Well, here at the law school, we don't have very many original ideas. We have never claimed to be the sharpest marbles in the drawer. And we follow the biblical maxim that says, you know, study the scriptures and study to show yourself approved and prove all things and hold fast that which is good and so on. So what we try to encourage our students to do is, well, don't believe me because I told you, but go look that up. And here's the source of information. And so this is chapter 18 of the book Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Fiction. Fact, fraud, or faith. And it's written by a guy who is a creationist. And we'll take a look at how many of these creationists are there. Well, some of the biggest names in science were creationists. You know, guys like Sir Isaac Newton and Louis Pasteur? I mean, you know, you take the big names like Kelvin and Watt and so on. These guys are not evolutionists by stretch of the imagination. And they write books, and they have made scientific discoveries. And today, the science community, if you were to take a look at science, and then the scientists, then divide them up into evolutionists and creationists, they would divide out 56-44. 56% of scientists believe in evolution, 44% believe in creation. Now, that's pretty close to 50-50. They're only 6 percentage points apart. You know, 44 to 56, you know, is 12. But if 6 from the evolutionary side were to change over to the creation side, we'd have a 50-50 split, wouldn't we? So it's pretty close to half and half. Now, the truth of the matter is, more of these scientists, of the 56% that claim to be evolutionists, see, that's an inflated number. Inflated. And the reason that we know that is because if you're a science professor and you're teaching at Harvard or Yale or something like that, if you were to tell the truth that you really didn't believe in evolution, but you rather believed that creation was probably the better argument, see, you'd lose your tenure there, professor, and you know it as well as I do. You'd be drummed out of there like Emmanuel Velikovsky was. So in the past, whenever a history professor or a paleontologist or scientific type, you know, says, here's what I believe, if he doesn't follow the party line, he loses his job. So right away, the people that say they believe in creation either have to be, one, we don't give a rat's you know what, or two, they're pretty safe in their job description, or they'd claim to be evolutionists also. You know, nobody wants to lose his job. It's disruptive. And so they just tell you the party line. So if you're working for the Massachusetts Institute of Technology and you're working on, you know, the Voyager space program or something like that, you know, the official party line is evolution. I mean, that's the story. It's the cover story. And that's what we believe because that's what I have to believe in order to justify my job. And that's why it's divided up 56-44. Otherwise, it would be probably 60-40 in the other direction, or maybe even better than that, as I'll show you as we progress along, because there's a lot of big-name guys right now today that tell you very plainly, hey, I don't believe in evolution. So it leads me to ask the question, well, if big names today tell you that they don't believe in evolution, well, are these guys Neanderthals? Are they fools, blind, stupid, archaic? Well, I don't think so. So what we're dealing with here is philosophy, and philosophy is just that. It's here's what we think. Here's my philosophy on that point. Here's what I think. Here's my opinion, which is worth nothing. My opinion isn't worth anything. Neither is yours. You're entitled to it. It's protected. It's free speech, but it doesn't mean that it's true or false. It doesn't mean jack squat. So going on here, evolutionists didn't want to give up Neanderthals, so respected scientist, you know, Marcellin Buell, B-O-U-L-E, comes along and he says, hey, listen, let's make this into what we want it to be. And they did. And it's being bandied about today, but by 1975, Neanderthal was recognized as being fully human. No missing link. Now, let's think about this for a second. Have you ever thought about these alleged missing links as just being varieties of human beings? You know, on planet Earth today, there's a bunch of people over in the Ituri rainforest of the old Belgian Congo. They're called pygmies. They're little black men. And they're barely 4 foot tall. Just little guys. They look just like other black people in Africa, but then you got some guys called Watutsis over there. They're about 7 feet tall, great big tall guys. So you got guys 4 to 7 feet tall. They're all black. Over in China, you got people over there that are barely 5 foot tall, and you got some that are 7. We got one here in the United States, plays basketball, Chinaman, 7 foot tall. Do we say today that this 7 foot tall Chinaman evolved out of 5-foot Chinamen, or that the 7-foot Chinaman today is evolving. No, we recognize him as being a Chinese guy that's 7 foot tall, nothing more, nothing less. Now, you've got people that have large heads and their brain capacity is larger than. Do we say that because people have larger brain capacity, because their heads are bigger, that they're smarter? Hell, I know a lot of big-headed people that are dumb as a box of rocks, and so do you. So the size of your head doesn't make you smart or dumb. And you know, those are people that live right now on planet Earth. Some of them live in New Guinea and they've got bones stuck through their nose. And some of them live in Rome and call themselves Catholics and work at the Vatican. I mean, come on. Now, when we pick up bones out of the ground, has it ever occurred to us that instead of being 3 races, that years ago there might have been 5 or 15 races, and that we're looking at different types of human beings? Has anybody ever thought of that? Well, I have, and so I just thought I'd throw that out to you. There's a lot of different varieties of people today, and one isn't evolving from the other. We don't say that we evolved out of pygmies in Africa now, do we? I mean, we haven't got to that point yet, have we? All right, so now with that out of the way, let's take a look at Piltdown Man. Now, this is the one that Sir Arthur Conan Doyle foisted off on the world, and he never admitted it. It took some detective work to figure out that it was Doyle that did it. It turned out in 1948 to be a fraud. Doyle never claimed that it was anything other than a fraud. Starting off here, he said, I would be remiss if I didn't deal with the famous and now infamous Piltdown Man, Pilty, they called him, if I can be so irreverent, turned out to be a fraud. Charles Dawson, a Sussex lawyer, had dug up some bones, said to be 500,000 years old in 1912 near Piltdown, England, that made each evolutionist's heart beat faster than a liberal politician's heart at the annual meeting of the American Civil Liberties Union. The evolutionists, flushed and excited, pointed to their missing link for more than 40 years and boasted about it in all of their textbooks as being proof of evolution. In fact, more than 500 doctoral dissertations were written on Piltdown Man, seeking to establish him as one of the most impressive finds in the history of science. Of all of these scientific frauds, Piltdown Man is probably the single most famous. So what did they find that made him so excited? Well, a jawbone and a part of a skull. That's right. They had a jawbone and a part of a skull. Then the jawbone was judged to belong to an ape 50 years old, not 500,000 years old, 50-year-old ape. That was what Sir Arthur Conan Doyle stuck in the ground saying. And it was to test his old buddy. And the skull was also young in that it was found to be only a few thousand years old, not millions. So when this became known, the experts, anyone 50 miles from home with a briefcase, looked more closely at the fossils and discovered fraud. Yes, I know scientists are supposed to be above that, but remember that the human heart is depraved and capable of incredible sin. So these people that wear these white smocks and call themselves scientists are just like all the rest of us, people that pull their pants on one leg at a time, except for the girls. Yeah, they might wear dresses. Well, hell, some of these scientists might wear dresses too, I'm not quite sure. But here's the moral to the story. They're not all honest, as we can see right now going on in front of our eyeballs with this global warming scam. A scientist is a paid professional who can be bought and paid for just like a politician. And these people make their living off of tax dollars, just like politicians do. And if they want to get their grants, and if they want to get their research projects approved, then they have to preach the party line. And the official party line comes out of Washington, comes out of London, Paris, Moscow. So in 1953, three honest scientists, which there's some of those too, three honest scientists, found that the modern ape's jaw and the human skull had been doctored to resemble an ape man, and the fake fooled the world's greatest experts. The persons responsible for the hoax or the fraud, some allege, were Dawson and Pierre Teilhard de Chardin, who had written several books trying to harmonize evolution and Christianity. Teilhard was a Jesuit priest. Evidently, he decided that Darwin and his disciples needed help to prove their point. However, in professing themselves to be wise, they became fools, as we read in Romans 1, verse 22. G. Himmelfarb candidly admitted the problem with Piltdown. He said, quote, the zeal with which eminent scientists defended it, the facility with which even those who did not welcome it managed to accommodate to it, and the way in which the most respected scientific techniques were soberly and painstakingly applied to it, with the apparent result of confirming both the genuineness of the fossils and the truth of evolution, were at the very least suspicious. Unquote. Now remember, when this is going on between 1912 and 1948, you know, very somber scientists, you know, with great pronouncements. Remember, 500 doctoral theses were written on Piltdown Man. 500 men got their PhDs by writing about this lie. How do you like that? Has it occurred to us that there's a bunch of other PhDs out there that got their doctoral theses based upon a thesis that was predicated upon lies, half-truths. We think that, maybe, it could well be. Huh? Now, oh, it could happen once, but never twice. You know, if you believe that, I got a bridge to sell and I got a watch here. Come on down. They're cheap. The truth of the matter is that scientists, like politicians, are for sale. Not all of them, but some of them are. And, you know, they'll write up whatever they need to write up in order to get whatever it is that they're after. Unscrupulous men are unscrupulous men, whether they're scientists or politicians. You know, we can't blame it all on the lawyers and politicians. All right, so this cleverly devised hoax made the scientists look like inept, incompetent, and inexpert fools, and Pilty was finally dropped after pressure from creationists quicker than a failing television series. Well, the evolutionists have their Dawson and Teilhard, and we Christians have our Jimmy Swaggart and Jimmy Baker. Now, I like that. This author here, you know, he's pretty honest guy here. Yeah, religion has their fakes also, phonies. And we call them televangelists over here in the States. Televangelists. They're phony. Just like Piltdown Man. Dr. W.R. Thompson, an evolutionist, commented on the Piltdown and Java Men in his introduction to the 1956 edition of Darwin's Origin of Species. He said, quote, "The success of Darwinism was accomplished by a decline in scientific integrity." That's quite a statement. The success of Darwinism was accomplished by a decline in scientific integrity. Means the scientists started lying. A striking example is the alteration of the Piltdown skull so that it could be used as evidence for the descent of man from the apes. But even before this, a similar instance of tinkering with evidence was finally revealed by the discoverer of Pithecanthropus, who admitted many years after his sensational report that he had found in the same deposition bones that were definitely human. Though these facts are now well known, a work published in 1943 still accepts the diagnosis of Pithecanthropus given by Du Bois as a creature with a femur of human form permitting an erect posture. Pithecanthropus, also known as Java Man. Okay, we've already covered Java. All right, now these are scientific hoaxes. These are lies, and these people knew they were lies when they did it. And then you and I, we went to high school and college, and we read these books, and we believed these lies, and then you probably went off to get your PhD, and then you believed the lie, and you wrote about it in your doctoral thesis and got your PhD based upon these lies. 500 of you did. On just Piltdown Man alone. So I accept Thompson's candor, but if a Christian creationist had been involved in such a fraud, it would not be called tinkering with evidence. It would be fraud, dishonesty, a hoax, and he would be forced to resign whatever position he might have had. But with evolutionists now, it's not called lying or fraud. It's called tinkering with evidence. So the people that gave us Piltdown Man have never been branded as liars and frauds. They've just been excused by tinkering, whatever tinkering means. I call it lying. Hey, we're at the halfway point here. Let me remind you that you're listening to the Law Hour and Editorial Review, and that we're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org. The law school teaches family law, tax law, courtroom strategy and procedure, business law, agricultural law, civil rights, and biblical law from the scriptural perspective. That's 8 schools in all. The law school is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals but by prearrangement. The law school conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc, and the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has our radio log schedule and archives, and all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Now, the law school offers a free 4-hour introductory CD package. Be sure to order one by calling the law school and asking for it. The number is 417-273-4967. Again, that's area code 417-273-4967. Now, if you're online, you can go to our website, georgegordon.org, click onto the archives page, and you can download that free general law CD package right there. Again, georgegordon.org. The sources of information that we use on this program are true, accurate, and correct to the best of our knowledge and belief, and the Law Hour and Editorial Review gives credit to those authors and publications that we use on this program, and we often endorse or recommend books, papers, periodicals, and newsletters to our listeners. Now, these endorsements, these recommendations that we give don't mean that the authors or publications that we're endorsing will necessarily reciprocate. Keep in mind that most of these authors and publications that we cite here on the Law Hour and Editorial Review may be hostile, political, religious, economic, sectarian, racial, or ethnic partisans, and their viewpoint may not be totally endorsed by the Law Hour and Editorial Review either. These opinions, beliefs, comments, views, and expressions that you hear on this program are mine and mine alone. They don't necessarily represent the views, beliefs, or the opinions of the advertiser, sponsors, management, or staff of this radio network or of this local radio station. If you'd like more information about the Law Hour and editorial review, then please go to our website. That's georgegordon.org, or you can call us direct at 417-273-4967. If you have a correction to make, rather than calling us, sometimes people call on the phone and they want to argue with me. I don't want to spend hours on the phone arguing with you. But if you hear something that you disagree with or you think is incorrect or a mistake, would you put it in the form of a letter and send it by snail mail or in the form of an email and send it to George Gordon School of Common Law at USA.net. It's all one word. It's a long word, but it's all one word. And if it has merit, and sometimes it does, we've been corrected more than once. People have written me letters and said, hey, you said this and such, and that isn't correct, and here's the correction, and here's the documentation. We do make mistakes here once in a while. It doesn't happen very often, but once in a while we do. And in order to preserve our reputation, what we're trying to do here, you know, is deliver factual information. Now, last week, we really hit the nail on the head with some good factual information that is so controversial, it gets you blinded, you know. People might want to kill you for telling some of the things that we tell here. So we try to be very careful that we're able to document this. And so if you're sitting there saying, well, I don't believe that these are frauds, this book is documented. He has a footnote here. And then he goes back here, and you can take a look at these numbers, you know, and these footnotes over here. And, you know, just to give you an illustration here, he's got a book called Ariel Roth, Coral Reef Growth Origins, Volume 6, Number 2. John Whitcomb, The World That Perished, page 114, 1973. R. Weissong, The Creation Evolution Controversy, page 455, 1984, you know, and so on. So when this guy wrote this book, you know, he wasn't just whistling Dixie. Every chapter has footnotes behind every major statement that is authored by somebody, someplace, you know, some scientist. Just like I did last week, I said, hey, don't believe me. Let me cite this directly from the encyclopedia. Let me cite this directly from this guy's book. Here's the publisher. You know, that's so that in case you sit there, and a lot of times we tell people things that are pretty damn incredible. Sometimes I read some of this stuff and I say, my God, that can't be true. Go check that out again. I find that hard to believe. And so we go out of our way now to chase out the sources. And we did that here. You know, this guy's not whistling Dixie now. The book, again, is called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith, Don Boyes, Ph.D. This guy's got a number. He's got a chapter number. He's got a source. He's got a document here that says, well, here's who said that. So when he's quoting some guy that makes an admission, these are the best kinds of proofs that you can present in court. It's the admission from the other party. I mean, you just can't beat the admission from the other party when we're talking about evidence, and that's what this guy, Boyes, has accomplished here. So when I saw this, I says, oh my God, do you mean to tell me that these evolutionists now, these scientists, the guys that write these books, like Piltdown Man, the one I just related to, that they call this tinkering? You know, their excuse is it's tinkering. My God, can you imagine Billy Graham getting caught like that? It's like Jimmy Swaggart over here, you know, banging a whore down in New Orleans, and, you know, and he's got tears rolling down his face over here, you know. I mean, it's pretty obvious that Jimmy Swaggart's as phony as a $3 Fed note, you know. But we don't look on these scientists, you know, these evolutionists as being just as phony as these religionists, do we? And then off to the side is the Bible. And this is the one that, you know, a little later on we're going to take a look at this. Because the evolutionists say, well, the reason we reject religion and the Bible is because the Bible says the world is flat. No, 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 no. The Bible says the world is round. In fact, it says it's a sphere. It's religious people that said it was flat. It wasn't the Bible that said that at all. It was Jimmy Swaggart and the Pope and five other guys over there. They were lying about misrepresenting God in the same way that these scientists are misrepresenting God in the creation. You know, they say, hey, this creation story is religious. There's nothing religious about Genesis 1, 2, and 3. That's science. The Bible is a science book. Got that? I know. You've heard all your life the Bible is not a treatise on science. That's a lie. The Bible is full of science. The Bible has the atomic theory in it, for crying out loud. The atomic theory in the Scripture. Meteorology is in the Scripture. There's all kinds of science in the Bible. It's the religious guys teamed up here with the politicians and the scientists that have said that the Bible isn't a science book. That isn't what God said. It's the scientists, the evolutionists, and the politicians, and the theologians that said the world is flat. It wasn't God. It wasn't the Bible that said that. So that's why I like to kind of separate myself both from the evolutionists and the creationists. Now, the creationists do have this much straight, and that is that the creation story in Genesis 1, 2, and 3 is true, accurate, and correct. Evolution's as phony as a $3 bill. But not everything that the evolutionist says is phony. So he comes along and gives you 80% truth. We found these bones, and here's where we found them. And then he doctors it up with an artist's sketch of Neanderthal, and then deceives us by telling us that, hey, this is a missing link between something and man. And then when it's all ironed out, we find out, you know, after 200 years or 100 years or 50 years, we find out, oh, wait a minute, that wasn't the way that was at all. That's a lie. And that's where this guy Boy is now, has shined. He put all the lies together. Now, again, there's other evolutionary books out there, and there's hundreds of them. Hell, there's more evolution books and stories out there than you can shake a stick at. So it's pretty hard to rate this book and say, hey, it's a 1 in 20 or it's a 1 in 100. But as I pointed out, I said, if I was going to rate this book along with, you know, 10 other evolutionary books, I'd put it in the top 10. And I said last time, the number one book that exposes evolution for the fraud that it is called The Genesis Flood by Whitcomb and Morris. That goes right to the top. I mean, that is a 1 in 100 book. That thing just stands out there all by itself. There's just nothing like it anywhere. Then you get into other books like Creation, Why We Believe in Creation Instead of Evolution, and others, and so on. And they're good, and they tell you a lot. Now, this guy, Boyce, he shines because, hey, let me articulate all these frauds. Oh, my God. I looked at Chapter 18. Let's take a look at Nebraska Man. Ever heard of Nebraska Man? Oh, God. Listen to this story. Nebraska Man was found in Nebraska in 1922 by Harold Cook. And it was a major discovery. But what was it that they found? It was one single tooth. Did you hear that? Let me underline that. Oh, my God. Nebraska Man was one single tooth. That's all they had, was a tooth. All right. Now, men have 32 teeth in their head. They found one tooth. Okay. Now they're going to make a Nebraska Man out of it. I kid you not. You can't make this kind of stuff up. Professor Henry Osborne of the Natural History Museum in New York, in a speech to the American Philosophical Society of Philadelphia on April 28, 1927, opined that Nebraska Man was the earliest fossil man ever found in North America, and consequently it belonged to an ape man, according to the experts. Oh, my God. Let me underline that. Experts, a single tooth, earliest fossil man in North America. Now, while it was only one tooth, imaginative scientists put the tooth inside a skull and the skull on a skeleton, and then dubbed him, see if I can pronounce this now, Hesperiopithecus Harold Cooki. Hey, you can't make this kind of crap up. Let me spell this for you, children. It's spelled H-E-S-P-E-R-O-P-I-T-H-E-C-U-S. Hesperopithecus Harold Cooki. H-A-R-O-L-D-C-O-O-K-I-I. Now, doesn't that sound impressive? Well, I'm impressed. One professor said the tooth was worth $1 million. Nebraska Man's picture appeared in the Illustrated London News on June 24, 1922, with him sitting around his cave with his wife. Now, wasn't that some deduction? They produced the likeness of Nebraska Man and his wife from a single tooth. Isn't it amazing what scientists can do with the cooperation of the media? Now, remember last week I told you that the media now is in the hands of a group of people represented by one of the secret societies. Now, when you and I pick up our Sunday paper and we take a look at the sections in the middle and we read these stories, we believe them. They're in print. They're put out by people like Harold Cooki, Harold Cook. And they tell us this is the earliest fossil man. They hang a label on it. They call it Hesperiopithecus Harold Cooki. And you and I are duly impressed, and we see the picture of this guy sitting outside his cave with his wife, wearing his loincloth or whatever. And we believe that because we believe that science has all the answers. Science is knowledge. Now, I want to remind you, what do these guys have? They've got one tooth. Got that? One tooth. Now, I remember a little earlier we talked about an Edsel. Remember the Edsel where we've got a wheel in the ditch and we've got a headlight? And then with the headlight and the wheel in the ditch, we come up and we call it a 1958 Edsel with 76,000 miles on it, driven by a little old lady from Pasadena wearing tennis shoes. Huh? Well, that's exactly what they're doing here. Now, if I did that with the Edsel car, you'd say, well, you're a lunatic. Well, excuse me, but aren't these people lunatics drawing up these pictures and come to these conclusions with one tooth? But you haven't heard the rest of the story yet. What kind of a tooth is this? See, a little later on, we're going to find out that this is a pig's tooth. It isn't even a human tooth. It's a pig's tooth. I mean, this fraud was better than Piltdown Man. Hell, at least with Piltdown Man, they had a jawbone, Sure, it was an ape's jawbone, but it was at least a jawbone with teeth in it. These guys haven't even got the jawbone. All they got is the tooth. They haven't even got the hole where the tooth came out of. All right, now, one professor said the tooth was worth $1 million. Well, the pictures, the press, and the professors all impressed people, even uninformed Christians. Some of them fled to their churches, clutched to their Bibles, and whimpered unconvincingly about how the Bible is still true in the original languages. But maybe we need to look again at Genesis 1 and 2. Maybe there's something in the gap theory after all. Now, the real problem here is with the religious people. See, the religious people, they don't read the Bible, and they don't know what it says, and they don't understand it. So then the science guy comes along, and he criticizes and ridicules the Bible, and there isn't anybody out there that can defend it. That's the tragedy of it all. The religious people over here can't defend it, and the evolutionary guy, he attacks it with a pig's tooth. Oh, for crying out loud. But then when they unearth his skeleton, Nebraska man turned out to be an extinct wild pig, and the newspapers did not give that fact any coverage. Now, do you wonder why? Well, Dr. Duane Gish wrote of this fraud, and he said, "I believe this is a case in which a scientist made a man out of a pig, and the pig made a monkey out of the scientist." Footnote 16. Now, footnote 16 back here tells us that we're in chapter 18, so let me find chapter 18 here. Here's 13, 14, 15, 16, 17. Let me see if I can give you the citation here. Chapter 18, here we are. Now we need footnote number 16. Duane Gish wrote this. Evolution, the Challenge of the Fossil Record, page 188. He wrote it in 1986. Okay. Now, nobody comes along and says, "Hey, by the way, here's a guy that wrote a book and explained the fraud here that was perpetrated by this wild extinct pig." Well, we say wild extinct pig. We don't know if that pig was wild or domesticated. All we know was that it's extinct. We don't find that type around anymore. Now, in the famous Scopes monkey trial back in 1925 in Dayton, Tennessee, Nebraska man was to speak loudly for the defense. Most people are only aware of that trial from a Hollywood production, but the film was riddled with fantasy, falsehood, and fiction. As is usual, Hollywood monkeyed around with the truth. The idea of a legal confrontation was hatched in the inner sanctum of the New York offices of the American Civil Liberties Union. The ACLU advertised in the Chattanooga Times for a teacher to test the state law that prohibited the teaching of evolution. John Scopes was presented by Hollywood as a fearful, surprised defendant, but the facts are totally different. John Scopes was a goat in a sting operation, a legal sting. It's done all the time, just like Rosa Parks was the goat in a legal sting by the ACLU and the NAACP. Rosa Parks did not just get tired one day and sit down on the front of the bus. Come on, let's wake up and smell the coffee here. He was a basketball coach and a substitute science teacher. He wasn't even a science teacher, he was a substitute. And he wasn't even sure he had taught evolution. At a meeting in a Dayton drugstore, Scopes agreed to be the defendant, and he tutored two boys in evolution while sitting in the back seat of a taxi in front of the drugstore so he could tell the truth at the trial. Remember, he's a substitute. This is a put-up trial, the Scopes monkey trial. It was a put-up deal. Not that it was illegal or unlawful or wrong. A lot of times we put on a sting in order to bring a legal issue into court so that we can test it or try it. So that's a common practice or procedure. But when Hollywood comes into the picture, you know, they portray this as something different, that he's just a poor victim being put upon by these religious kooks, which wasn't anywhere near the truth. All right, now Darrell waved the London newspaper with the picture of Nebraska man, and he ridiculed William Jennings Bryan and Christians everywhere. And Hollywood made Bryan look like a fool, a crackpot, when the fool and crackpot was Darrell, as the trial transcript shows, especially in light of what we know about ape men in general and Nebraska man in particular. Now, the Omaha World Herald humorously, although properly, chastised scientists in their February 24, 1928 edition. Hesperiopithecus, alias the million-dollar tooth, has taken another tumble, and oh, what a bump it got. Instead of being the sole surviving remnant of a noble Nebraska Neanderthal, it turns out to be a grinder from the prehistoric jaw of one of his pigs. Instead of being worth a million, it's worth, judging from the price of pork on the hoof today, perhaps all of 30 cents. Now, someone might think that they were unkind, but I think it was apropos. Scientists have been getting away with murder, and it's time we called their hand. The Omaha editor did just that, much to the delight of creationists. The Omaha paper continued, "It isn't so much the loss of this tooth's fame, which we mourn, as it is the loss of our faith in the infallibility of science. If there is so little difference between a pig's tooth and a man's that the one may be mistaken for the other for 8 years, aren't there infinite chances for error in the identification of the fossilized fragments out of which such an amazingly strange prehistoric fauna has been recreated for us?" No one expects scientists to be infallible. We just expect them to be honest. Now, no one talks about Nebraska man anymore. He has been buried along with his tooth No doubt most people think that evolutionists should learn from their mistakes and frauds, but they keep showing up. Now, this is a pretty obvious fraud. Now, I did not hear about Nebraska Man when I was a kid in high school. So, evidently, that fraud had been taken out of the textbooks. Now, Neanderthal was there, Archaeopteryx was there when I was a kid. And, you know, I didn't know that those were frauds until recently. Well, I didn't know they were frauds until I read this book. And then I looked at the footnotes and I said, oh my God, you mean people have been writing books about this for years? Well, how come we haven't heard about this before? And that's where this book comes to the fore. It's written by a fellow named Don Boyes, D-O-N-B-O-Y-S, easy enough, Don Boyes, Ph.D. Ph.D., you know what that means? Piled higher and deeper. Anyway, Don Boyes likes the title Ph.D., so he put it on there. And he wrote a book called Evolution, Fact, Fraud, or Faith. And I would rate it about my number 6, 7, 8, 9, or 10. You know, if I had 10 books on evolution here, which I do, and then I said I rated the Genesis flood number 1, I don't know exactly where I'd put this book, but I'd put it in the top 10. It's that good. And again, it's well documented. So before you write me a letter, you know, and tell me how stupid I am and how out of touch with reality I am and how what a Neanderthal I am, would you please check your numbers and check your facts again there, son, because I did check mine. I mean, I got all the footnotes here. I'm not talking off the top of my head. I'm not smart enough to do that. So I've got the book with all the footnotes and the books that are in here to document these frauds. So I went ahead and I did my homework, and I want you to do the same. Now, I'm not against you evolutionists. Don't you think that I'm out here, you know, beating your head against the sidewalk here. I'm not at all. I pound religious people just about as hard as I do evolutionists. You know, we just pound everybody here, you know, just trying to get to the facts, just like reporters are supposed to do. Hey, let me give you a final reminder here that you are listening to The Law Hour, an editorial review. We're sponsored by the Gordon Law School of Isabella, Missouri. The Law Hour is heard 7 days a week here in the United States. We're heard around the world in more than 120 countries daily over the Internet and radio. If you'd like more information about the Law School and the Law Hour, then please go to our website at georgegordon.org. Now, the Law School is a private, non-commercial, non-profit, non-sectarian law school that is open to individuals, but by prearrangement. Now, the Law School conducts a homeschooling program for adults on compact disc. And the Law Hour website is updated weekly, and it has a radio log schedule and archives. And all of that can be accessed through our website at georgegordon.org, georgegordon.org. All of these Law Hour programs are archived on the Internet by title and date for your listening convenience, and the Law Hour is an educational service brought to you in the public interest. Hey, we're out of time. I've got to give you the final reminder here and leave it right here. We'll see you back here tomorrow night, same time, same station, God willing, of course. So until then, thanks for listening, everybody, and good night, friends.